Welcome to The More Perfect Union, a podcast about the joy we get from American politics, or as we like to call it, real debate without the hate. Hello, I'm Kevin Kelton, and I will be your moderate Democrat from Los Angeles, California.
I am DJ McGuire, your libertarian neoconservative from Suffolk, Virginia.
I'm Cliff Dunn. I'm your Republican from Newport News, Virginia.
I'm Emily Brewer. I'm the other Republican.
And I'm Greg Matuszak, your liberal Democrat, because what's a party without a liberal Democrat from Cincinnati, Ohio?
A More Perfect Union is now number 12 in the news and politics podcasts in the nation. So thank you to all of our listeners. We can also be found on iTunes, iHeartRadio, at moreperfectunionpodcast.com, and on Facebook at facebook.com/moreperfectunionpodcast.
And this is a special edition of the More Perfect Union podcast because it's the day before Election Day and the day after National Saxophone Day. Two big days in our country's history. DJ, what should we talk about first?
Well, as if the FBI director didn't have enough fun last week, he drops a letter yesterday afternoon essentially saying, you remember that new stuff we were looking at earlier? Well, we looked at it, and it's all good. Nothing to see here. Good. Thanks for your time.
Keep moving.
Does this new letter, which technically exonerates Hillary, or at least goes back to where things were 12 days ago, does it have a significant effect on the outcome of the election?
I am going to say no for this reason. I'm not sure Comey's letter actually had the effect it's claimed to have had, the first letter in the election. I was looking at the tracking polls over the last 2 weeks or so, and the tightening of the races, for the most part, the tightening of the race in the polls occurred before Comey's letter hit. If you look at the polling that was completed on Thursday the 27th before the Comey letter, and then look at the polling that starts on the 29th after the Comey letter. So it's about a four or five day gap. There really isn't much change between those two dates and those two points in time. In fact, in most of the polls, Clinton actually put a little distance between herself and Trump, however small. So I think the tightening was just a typical second look effect that we get every October. It happened before the Comey letter came out, the first one. So I don't really think the second one will do anything. It will just bring us – if it brings us back to where we were on the 27th, that's largely still where we are now.
I think for the folks that had any question or were on the fence, I think this may have strengthened their resolve to support Hillary Clinton, just, you know, out of a sense of, you know
– a little bit of a backlash, you mean?
Yeah, a little bit of a surety probably for those that may have been on the fence and then came to her side and then they had a pause. I think this vindicated their thought process probably.
I'm inclined to say that it has very little, if any, impact for the simple fact that the narrative surrounding it, you know, some of the headlines are just going back to FBI declines to indict Clinton again. FBI declines to indict is not exactly a roaring endorsement, so I think that at least limits any upside for Hillary.
Yeah, you know, the fifth rule of the internet is never read the comment section, but I love it. It's one of my favorite things to do. And if you read the comments on Fox News today, it has been, well, this is terrible. This is a disgrace. But if you read a week ago from the first Comey letter, it was like, finally, this is great. And we could flip-flop them from like MSNBC. So these letters have really just reinforced the same thoughts and the same camps.
So. Okay, so I'm going to side with Emily on this. I do think that it did have an effect, and it's going to be, I think, actually significant. I agree with DJ and everybody else who said that the race was tightening on Thursday or the Friday morning before that first letter became news. However, I do think that a lot of independents and soft Republicans went back to Trump because the feeling was, oh God, it's never going to end with this woman. So yesterday, when the news broke that this second letter had come out, the cable news stations were speculating that it's too late for this new news that, again, apparently vindicates her to register with people who are going to vote. And my thinking is, Why? First of all, we're talking about 80 million people. Even though there are 40 or 45 million who voted already, 80 million are still yet to vote on Election Day. People still go to the polls on Election Day. And the American people are not that dumb. They don't need 36 hours to absorb this news. It's right. Pretty basic news. So I do think that if there was a chance she was going to lose Michigan, if there was a chance he was going to tighten up Pennsylvania, I think this now is going to put Michigan more solidly in her camp. I think this might strengthen her numbers in Pennsylvania. So I do think that yesterday was a very good day for Mrs. Clinton.
Now, quick head count. Who here has already voted? Who's done the early voting?
I have.
Kevin has. Emily has.
I have not. I'm voting on Tuesday.
Right. I vote on Tuesday, too. I love the pageantry. I love the ritual. I, you know, obviously Catholic. I love the formality. I love fighting crowds. I love yelling at protesters. I love all of
it. Oh, well, I'll be bringing my gun to the local polling place. Don't worry about that.
Right. Right.
So, Greg, do you think it would improve turnout if we included Gregorian chants and incense?
Oh, of course. Of course.
Being would said, you like a sample ballot today? Oh. Thank that being you for voting.
that is a not a Gregorian chant. That is a Maguire chant.
The scary thing is, I'm sober tonight, folks.
Okay, so I think where Greg was going with this is everybody knows, if you've listened to the podcast, you know where Greg and me, Kevin, you know what we're going to do or what we have done with our votes. But the other people on the cast have been a little mushy at times.
Ahem.
Has anybody's...
Ahem.
Ahem. Okay, Cliff, what about you? Do you want to say for sure who you're voting for?
Trump.
Okay, so no change there. Emily?
I voted for Trump over a month ago.
Okay. Does that still count, do you think? And DJ, what about you?
Oh, yeah, had to ask.
Now, you've been a Johnson supporter.
I have. Now, as you know, my candidates for president this year have dropped like flies, and I have opined that the major party nominees would do relatively equal damage to the country, while Gary Johnson would be superior to both. Information this past week or so has led me to change my mind.
Really?
Yes. Yes, it has.
Was it because he supports marijuana?
I was actually so nervous about this. I have a statement here, and you've already tripped me up. Thank you, Greg. Sorry.
No. Drum roll, please.
Yeah. Keep in mind, I am one of the few Americans who has never wavered in support of the Iraq War, that the remnants of the Iraqi Ba'athist regime have taken over al-Qaeda in Iraq and renamed it ISIS, merely reinforces my belief that removing that brutal tyranny from power over all of Iraq was the right thing to do. Ba'athism is quite literally the Arab version of Nazism. It was inspired and aided by Hitler's regime in the early days, and it has terrorized Iraq and Syria for decades. The Syrian version, the Assad family regime, has seen whole cities erased, victims of chemical weapons attacks, a neighboring prime minister assassinated, repeated invasions of Israel, and efforts to build nuclear weapons. It really says all we need to know about Assad, that millions of his countrymen are choosing not to escape ISIS to go to him, but rather to escape to Europe from him. A Syria free of Ba'athism would, in my opinion, greatly stabilize the Arab world and help bring forth the Middle East of nations choosing their own leaders and trading peacefully with each other. Call that Pollyannish, but it's something I have felt and believed for all of the 21st century. I saw reports this weekend from both the United States and the region itself that the Syrian opposition, and I mean the real one, not the Iraqi Ba'athists who keep ISIS operating, that they've expressed an opinion in this election. They said which candidate they believe will most help them, and that was enough to tip the balance between the major party candidates, and that countered Johnson's superior position in economic matters to me. My long-running inner conflict between the neoconservative and the libertarian was decided in the neoconservative's favor. Now, I'll be honest, for the analyst in me, this is a real leap of faith. But if there is a chance of a free Syria, I must take it. I have to stand with the people of Syria who want to rid their country of tyrants and terrorists. They prefer Hillary Clinton, so God help me, so must I. And now, if you'll excuse me, I am still sober, so I must see to that.
I got to tell you that during that rant, I thought you were going to say you were going to write in Assad.
No way. I saw it a mile away.
No, I didn't know where that was going. Wow. Okay. Well, that's
Wow. That's awesome.
Big news.
Kudos to, kudos to you, Greg, for actually paying attention to the world around you.
I know. I saw as soon as you said, I knew the endorsement. Wow.
I'm shell shocked.
I know.
Okay, but really, really well articulated and obviously well thought out. So very interesting news.
Oh, you are going to be so welcome at our Democratic breakfasts. Oh, we have like pancakes this week. It's awesome.
Do you still have the picture of me at 12 years old when I backed Walter Mondale, or was that lost in the digitization of the Democratic Party?
DJ, I have to say one thing. Given your record so far this year, I'd like to thank you for supporting Hillary Clinton.
Bravo, Cliff. Bravo.
So, DJ, let me ask you this. So you were a very strong Johnson supporter. You've switched to one of the major candidates. Do you think that a lot of Americans are going to be doing what you did? Do you think that his support is going to soften in the next 2 days, or has already?
Well, it has, frankly, over the last several weeks. A lot of previous Johnson voters came home to Trump, I think largely because they kept getting berated over the fact that they needed to vote for one of the major party candidates. Ironically, it was the Clinton people who seemed, or the Clinton supporters, who seemed most eager to insist that everybody had to vote for one of the two major party candidates. And what they did not realize is that they were just driving a lot of Johnson voters to Trump out of despair. Now, I don't think a lot of voters will do what I did, which is essentially take what many would consider an obscure issue to make a decision. I think it'll be, in their case, a matter of, do I think my vote will be wasted? Do I despise one of the major party candidates so much more than the other one that I will vote for the one I hate the least just to keep the one I hate the most out? That's really a question that I think most Johnson and Stein and McMullen and undecided voters have really been struggling with for a very long time. For various reasons, it wasn't necessarily one that I struggled with. I looked at my issue set and I said, oh, that pretty much solves it, until the issue set changed on me. I think a lot of them, I think we've seen a drop in Johnson support. We've seen a drop in McMullen support in Utah, for that matter. Jill Stein barely registered before, but she registers even less now. We're not seeing as much of a squeeze as we normally see, but we have seen a squeeze. The question is going to be, for the Libertarians, can they get to that 5%? And frankly, it says something that the party most interested in less government intervention and less government aid is now clamoring to get to a 5% level so they can get federal campaign funds.
That never occurred to me before, but that is such a delicious irony. That is great.
Yes, it is, isn't it?
So do you all think that Johnson will end up with the 5%? Because right now he's polling at 6, I think, is what 538 is predicting he'll end, or 6.5. Do you think he'll end up with that 5%?
I think he gets there narrowly, and it's partially an artifact of early voting, i.e. enough people who pull the lever for him pulled it earlier. And so some of this cook-off doesn't quite hit him as hard as it quote-unquote should.
I don't think he's going to hit it anymore, and I'll tell you why. Is with the polling tightening, I think some people are going to have to choose to jump off the bridge and support either Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton, and I think this may push him down into 3.5-4% because of that, because people feel like a protest vote isn't going to be as much of a protest vote as it will be a hindrance to either major party candidate.
I'm curious. I'm going to throw this to Cliff. I know that you probably don't think you could change DJ's mind, but if you were going to make one argument to try to, if you really wanted to bring a voter back to your candidate, what would you say to DJ, or do you have any idea what argument you think might resonate with him?
Well, at least my biggest response to DJ is that while I agree with him on the, as he said, quote unquote, Pollyanna-ish view about, a free Syria is better for everybody, it is not our job, our duty as a nation to free the people of Syria. That we should not spend our blood and treasure on another war there. Now, I understand the point about Iraq, and with all of the bandying about that Saddam Hussein did with weapons, he was at the very least a destabilizing influence and needed to be personally removed. That being said, no, I don't think we should potentially shed another, 1,000 or 2,000 American lives and perhaps another 50 or 100 billion or more on another country in the Middle East where those people have no oath towards America, they have no duty towards us, and where 5 or 10 years after we leave, they will likely have the same general attitude towards Americans as they did before.
It's not so much as we have some sort of duty or obligation to bring democracy to Syria or to bring freedom of some kind to Syria, is that I think it is in America's interests to have a Syria that doesn't assassinate the Lebanese prime minister when he gets out of line, that it is in our interests to have a Syria that is not looking to build nuclear weapons that Israel has to essentially bomb out of existence every 10 years, that it is in America's interest to have a Syria that gets along and trades with its neighbors instead of fomenting rebellions and various other problems in terms of messing them up, that it is in America's interest to have a Syria that is outside of Iran's sphere of influence. I think those things are in America's interest. I think America will be better off for a Syria that is without all of those things. So, no, do we have an obligation to do this? No, we don't have an obligation. The only obligation America has is to its interests. But I would say my guess is, Cliff, that we probably define America's interests differently, especially when it comes to Syria.
Wow. Okay, so let's get back to the election. That was a nice little detour. Anybody here want to go out on a limb and say that they still think Donald Trump has a better than 50-50 chance of winning?
I will.
Where do you see his path as far as electoral votes?
Well, I think Michigan. I think he's going to win Ohio. I think that he's strengthening in Florida. Michigan, I think he will be able to possibly pull out. And he's going to have to pick up a handful of other toss-up states.
But the big question is, he's got to at least turn maybe 2 or 3 blue states red, at least.
Right.
So throw out 1 or 2 states, like maybe Michigan. That's one.
Virginia, he's actually picked up an incredible amount of momentum in the past 7 days.
Okay.
And honestly, to put it in perspective, in the past, Tim Kaine does not do much to help Hillary Clinton in Virginia. If Hillary wins Virginia, it's on her own merits, not with his assistance.
Really?
Because he was probably one of the least popular governors in Virginia.
Wow. Well, this never came up before. And this is the first I'm hearing that.
I was going to say, I've only heard glowing things.
He wasn't a very memorable governor, to be honest. And he did some legislation. I can't remember the specifics of it, but it upset the Sheriff's Association and the Police Association in the state incredibly, that even elected Democrats wouldn't probably piss on him if he was on fire. He also wrecked the budget in Virginia, but DJ can probably tell you about that.
Now, I will freely acknowledge that Tim Kaine as governor badly misestimated revenues that were coming in. However, I think the real surprise in this election will be a shy Clinton factor. I think the first Comey letter, it eliminated the shy Trump factor because it gave every Trump voter reason to come out and say, that's why I'm voting for Trump. But I think it has created a shy Clinton factor, and I think that will show up in a number of states throughout the country. I look at the Nevada race, and I see a rerun of the Engel-Reed race of 2010, where Engel was creeping ahead in polling in the last few weeks, but Reed still beat her in 2010. And for all of Hillary Clinton's ethical questions, and I'm not going to say they've disappeared, they are still out there, Harry Reid is one of the very few people in Washington who has more ethical questions than Hillary Clinton ever had, and he still won Nevada in 2010.
Right.
If this state is a rerun, then it's going to be a situation where we all think, oh, yeah, Trump's going to win Nevada. So we're going, what? Hillary Clinton won Nevada? It'll be that's exactly what happened in 2010. We all thought Harry Reid was toast, and then he wasn't. I personally think North Carolina, there's still some serious HB2 blowback. And I think that and some shy Clinton support will carry her ahead. To be honest, I think her quote firewall unquote will largely hold. I do think Trump will win Ohio and Iowa. Sorry, Greg. But I think at the end of the day,
it's killing me.
By 11:59 tomorrow night, if not sooner, Hillary Clinton will have 323 electoral votes to Trump's 186. And maybe we'll get a result in Florida sometime Wednesday.
Interesting. Well, I think that I think she's going to win with 303 electoral votes, give or take. I think that she will not get Ohio. She will not get Iowa. I sense New Hampshire might be slipping away from Hillary. And I think that because of everything we've heard about the African-American turnout not quite being what they had hoped it would be, she may lose North Carolina. I think that she's going to be strong in Michigan. I think she's going to be strong in Pennsylvania. I think she's going to win Florida, and I think she's already won Nevada.
The one state I think she actually has a problem with that is not being talked about actually is Pennsylvania, and that has more to do with the fact that there's a transit strike going on in Philadelphia right now, which has room to knock black/minority turnout in the Philadelphia area by quite a bit because, you know, a lot of those people don't have cars.
Can I make a prediction there? Can I just jump in and make a prediction that tomorrow you're going to find out that the striking transit workers are going to make a one-day exception and go back to work on Tuesday? I think that that's going to happen.
I think that's going to happen too. And as far as Pennsylvania, Secretary of State Clinton, I'm going to use her full name until I start calling her Madam President, has been in Pennsylvania 16 times since the convention. She has spent so much time in Pennsylvania, especially in the cities, and trying to get the urban vote out and minority vote out. I really think that it's going to pay off. I think she will win Pennsylvania. I think we will lose Ohio. You know, I think that's going to break my heart.
And I agree with you on Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania has been a tease for Republicans for decades, and it will continue to be a tease just out of reach. Secretary Clinton will win Pennsylvania. I think Pat Toomey loses his seat. I think we haven't talked about the Senate races, but the close Senate races normally don't split 50-50. They normally go in a wave. I know it looks close now, but I think the shy Clinton factor, which I actually think will happen, will lead to a Democratic wave. Because this is something we haven't talked about, and I'm not going to talk about it because I have time and I'm drunk. There's been some discussion about polling issues and how polling has sort of been messed up recently. But what we haven't talked about is the fact that, for the most part, it is the incumbent party that overperforms on Election Day compared to the polls. It happened in Alberta in 2012. It happened in Quebec in 2012. It happened in British Columbia in 2013. And, of course, it happened in the British election of 2015.
In the last three presidential elections in the United States, it happened.
And that, too. And in North Carolina in particular, and this is why I still think the Democrats will carry North Carolina across the board, Republicans have actually underperformed on Election Day compared to polling. Mitt Romney was supposed to win North Carolina by 4 or 5 points. He won it by less than one. Republicans underperform in North Carolina compared to polling. I think they're going to do it again. And that's why I think Mrs. Clinton, Ms. Ross, and Mr. Cooper will carry North Carolina in a big Democratic sweep.
I agree with DJ on the North Carolina sweep. I talked to a friend of mine who is a staunch Republican this week, and he voted early because he works in Virginia. And he told me that he voted for McCrory, which was shocking considering all the HB2 nonsense. He voted for Trump, and then he voted local races Republican, and he split the Burr Ross race and voted for Ross, which I found to be very, very interesting. So I guess he absolved his guilt for the McCrory vote. But I think, I'm hearing a lot of Republicans that are really, really conflicted with all of the HB2 stuff and some other issues going on in Carolina that I feel very strongly it's probably going to be a sweep for the Democrats. I agree with DJ.
I think Republicans can control the Senate with 51 seats.
And the presidential election, do you want to take a shot at what you think the Electoral College vote will look like?
In all honesty, I'm going to give Trump about somewhere in the 270s.
Okay. What does everybody think will be the big surprise coming out of Tuesday night or Wednesday morning or the week to come after that?
Oh, gosh. I think that we may not know who the president is until Wednesday morning. That's my big prediction. There are so many states in play this year that are just scary. I think North Carolina is going to be something to watch way, way late. I think Florida is going to be quite a toss-up, and I agree with Cliff, I think we'll barely hold on to the Senate. We will do it, and I'm going to make a bold prediction, and I'm going to say Mr. Trump by one.
Okay. Greg?
Yeah, actually, I had also said that we will all go to bed tomorrow night not knowing who the president is. And so none of us are actually going to sleep. But I have the exact opposite. And I also think that Mr. Trump will not concede until Friday morning. Kellyanne will come out and say, well, there's no actual need for him to concede, is there? And he didn't actually lose, did he? Did he lose, really? And then she'll tell it, say something else. But that will be be the thing.
Cliff?
I'm going to agree with the, you know, overarching sentiment that we don't know who the president is Tuesday night. I think it takes into Wednesday or Thursday. And I'm also going to suggest that we have a significant state, you know, one of the close swing states, goes into a nasty recount.
Okay.
Ooh, I hope you're wrong.
DJ?
What the hell is wrong with you people? Of course we'll know who the president is, who the president-elect, excuse me, is by 11:59 p.m. tomorrow night. We will know it is Hillary Clinton. She will have 323 electoral votes. I told you this earlier today. Man, the alcohol is really having an effect, but I'm still right.
Can I say something? I've been wanting to say this since we first began this podcast. DJ, you are so in love with Hillary Clinton. You have such a hard-on for this woman.
Oh, my goodness.
What can I say? He likes a hot blonde, right?
Kevin, what's your prediction?
My prediction is that the word "I'm going to sue" is going to come up in Mr. Trump's non-concession speech. I think he will be threatening lawsuits on Tuesday night or Wednesday morning. I agree that this thing may not be officially wrapped up until Thursday or Friday. Whoever said that, I think it was Greg. I think I agree with them. I think that Kellyanne will be saying, well, Bernie Sanders didn't concede right away. Why should we? And I also think that there's going to be some unfortunate incidents at some polling places. Thank you to the Trump campaign and the way they've told people to go out and become unofficial poll watchers. So I think it's going to be a messed up day. And frankly, although I hope that I'm wrong, I think that we'll be as much on edge on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday as we all are today.
You're wrong.
Well, good.
Be reassured in the notion that you are wrong.
And we will probably be doing a post-election podcast on Wednesday night when we can discuss all of this. So look for that in your podcast inbox.
That is right, because I can remind all of you that you were wrong.
With that, we want to thank you guys for listening. Please like us on Facebook at facebook.com/moreperfectunionpodcast. Please, please, please share a link on your Facebook newsfeed so your friends can maybe follow us and maybe they'll like us too. And if you enjoy political debates and you'd like to be a part of ours, please join us on Open Fire. It's our political discussion group on Facebook. We're there and we'd like to see you there too. So until next week, goodbye, guys.
And happy National Saxophone Day.
Oh, I was going to say that.
Greg, you're on.
Oh, my God.